What's up, everybody? It's Michael Scotto, Hoops Hype's NBA writer and host of the Hoops Hype podcast. We're getting closer towards the start of the NBA season, a couple of weeks away now. So I figured what better time to bring on our next guest. He's ESPN's NBA front office insider, and he previously spent 20 years with the Brooklyn Nets organization, splitting time in Brooklyn and New Jersey. It's Bobby Marks of ESPN. Bobby, I appreciate you hopping on the line with me. How are you doing, brother?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
As you can tell by the tone of my voice, I'm excited for the start of the season coming up soon. It's a rapid turnaround for us coming off this off-season, the draft and free agency. You and I have a ton to look at as we preview what I hope to be an exciting season ahead, and I think it certainly will be. You know better than anybody, being in a front office for multiple decades, that a lot of your season is shaped in the offseason with the moves you make. And from your standpoint, I was curious some of the winners that you saw from this offseason. We saw a lot of moves, a couple of big trades, Chris Paul going to the Suns. The Hawks made a ton of signings in the offseason. When you look at the NBA landscape and who won the offseason thus far, who are your favorite teams?
Well, I think, Mike, I want to start in Portland, and I've been pretty upfront as far as, I even said it on national TV on SportsCenter when I thought that the Trailblazers have the second best team in the Western Conference right now. And I really like what they were able to do with building their bench depth. Started with that Robert Covington trade when they sent a future one in Trevor Ariza to the Rockets, and then they were able to go out and get Enes Kanter, re-signed Rodney Hood, brought back Derek Jones, Carmelo Anthony, signed Harry Giles. And I really like what they did. And I think why I look at it, and I probably look at it a little bit differently this year, is because of how this season is going to go and how condensed it's going to do. We're going to cram 72 games over the next, you know, 5+ months here. And depth is going to be key here. And then when you have, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, and you've got Jusuf Nurkić, you'll see the health of Zach Collins, what happens with him. I like what Neil O'Shea did in Portland, especially with, I don't want to say it's easier, Mike, when you have cap space and you can kind of shape your roster, but when you really are just dealing with your non-tax mid-level, which is, 9.3 and your biannual, to be able to kind of construct it from a trade, they basically hit it on all different facets, trade, in free agency. I do like what the Trailblazers did.
One of the things you mentioned that you felt they were the second best team in the West right now. Are you putting the Lakers ahead of them right now, being that they were the defending champs?
Yeah, with separation. I think there's more separation to where the Lakers are this year, going into the regular, a couple weeks before the regular season compared to where we talked about them a year ago. We all talked, everyone had, I think the majority of people had the Clippers as the number one team. And I just think where the Lakers are, what they were able to do, of course, with AD coming back on that 5-year deal, the extension with LeBron, where those two players are, from a high level to franchise level, top five players, and then basically go out and remake your roster, which is rare when you're coming off a championship, when you've kind of infused some new blood with, you did the Dennis Schroeder for Danny Green trade. You went out and got Montrezl Harrell for the 9-3 mid-level, Marcus Gasol, Wes Matthews. You brought back Markieff Morris. I really like what the Lakers were able to do. I'm a little bit gun-shy on, I think the Clippers saved their offseason with the Serge Ibaka signing. I think that was huge for them. We'll see what Nick Batum still has left in the tank. Reggie Jackson really wasn't a factor during the playoffs. And then for Denver, a team that was in a Western Conference Finals, you lose Jeremy Grant and Mason Plumlee. You bring in JaMychal Green. You bring back Paul Millsap. And we'll see if Jamal Murray can be, Jamal Murray can be regular season Jamal Murray here. So Those teams will certainly be in the thick of it. Utah, too, I think will be up there. Dallas, certainly. But I do think where this Laker team right now is, there is some separation in the, if you're a Laker fan out there and you see this team get off to a slow start, don't worry. it's a matter of, we know what this team can do in the playoffs. And I'm sure that Frank Vogel, the head coach, is going to be cautious as far as from a minute standpoint, certainly in the early part of the season.
I agree with you, Bobby. When I look at the Lakers, they certainly upgraded on paper and getting Montrezl Harrell to switch locker rooms within the Staples Center from the Clippers to the Lakers was a nice addition for them, certainly among the other moves that they made. I think also, you know, you touched on the Nuggets and you touched on Jamal Murray. Jamal was a guy that we had wrote about on Hoops Hype during the playoffs. We polled a couple of executives and scouts and asked them if they felt that he could carry that type of level into this upcoming season. And the prevailing sense was there was no reason why this couldn't be an all-star caliber year for him, which would be his first. He'll be an X factor there. Another guy I want to touch on later as we go through certain topics as we preview the season for potential awards. I think Michael Porter Jr. is a guy that is going to be a most improved player of the year candidate, but we'll touch on that later for sure. You touched on the Clippers. I loved the Ibaka signing for them, considering some of the bigs that they have to face in the West, his shot blocking ability and pick and pop ability beyond the 3-point arc is going to be crucial for them. And so, yeah, you touched on Portland being a team that you definitely felt like was a winner. For me, I thought the Phoenix Suns getting Chris Paul was a huge addition for them, because as this team is trying to develop those young guys and show them what a winning culture looks like and make the playoffs for Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, getting a guy like Chris Paul, in my opinion, is going to move the needle for them. You saw what he did with an Oklahoma City Thunder team that was projected by many people to be a lottery team going into last season. A lot of that had to do with Chris Paul's leadership and play on the court. You know, even as he's past his mid-30s, into his mid-30s at this point, Chris Paul has still shown an ability to play in an elite level. So for me, when I looked at Phoenix, that was a great addition for them, and they added a bunch of shooting as well. Anybody else in the West stick out to you as far as a winner in this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, what you just said about Phoenix. I mean, especially where, you know, you, and it's funny when we talk about Chris Paul, Mike, because it was like 2 years ago when we were saying like, oh my God, this contract, right? The toxic contract. He's owed $130 million. He's been injury prone. And now all of a sudden, like, Chris Paul's like, hey, it's good value, right? I mean, he still has two years, $80 million left. But when you put in with Devin Booker and then you bring back Dario Saric and you sign Jay Crowder for the mid-level exception, and there's a lot of hope with that team, especially how they played in the bubble. But as you know, that Western Conference is certainly a bear. But I think, Mike, the one team that we don't talk about is Utah enough. And I know it wasn't a, you know, big splashy free agent period, but they went out and got Derek Favors. They re-signed Jordan Clarkson. Donovan Mitchell's back on that rookie extension here. And as much as success Denver had in the Orlando, I mean, this Utah team was up 3-1, was a Mike Conley shot away from going to a conference semifinals without Bojan Bogdanovic. And I think this Utah team is going to be up there in the top four, top five. You know, I do like the Favors addition. Certainly Clarkson, we saw when they added him around Christmas time last year, how much of an impact he had. So I think Utah, from that under the radar standpoint that maybe nobody's really talking about, just for some, you know, I call them singles and doubles type for, signings.
You know, it's funny, you brought up your guy Bojan Bogdanovic, who used to have in Brooklyn at the time. I always remember, I don't know if you ever heard the story, but when we used to go talk to him in a post-game locker room and maybe he would have a big game, you know, we asked him what was the difference. He'd always say, like, it was the confidence, you know, booyah. And he was a funny guy. We always enjoyed working with him.
My funny Bojan Bogdanovic story is not what he did on the court. Is that And when we acquired him in the trade, the night of the draft, I believe it was 2010, the trade didn't actually happen until the next day. And I missed, I think my now 14-year-old, I think he might have been four, and he had his preschool graduation. And I remember missing it because I had to sit in my car doing the trade call because it had been delayed to like 5 o'clock at night on that Friday after the draft. So that's my Bojan Bogdanovic story, and how I missed my 4 or 5 year old's preschool graduation.
Well, that's part of the life of an NBA executive. Sometimes those things happen, but, no, I liked Bojan. He was always a good dude, and you know, certainly he'll be a key figure in Utah's chances next season as we look ahead. And Donovan Mitchell, we also saw take a step in the playoffs, really elevate his game from an all-star caliber guy to a superstar, at least in the playoffs. We'll see if he can continue that through this upcoming season. Were there any other teams that you felt like had a good offseason in the West, maybe the Pelicans for the Jrue Holiday haul that they had?
Yeah, I mean, I do like what New Orleans did, because we all thought, hey, when you move off Jrue Holiday, that you're basically kind of really retooling it. I think they kind of just restructured their roster a little bit, and they took advantage of a Milwaukee team that, you know, is looking to, you know, add pieces, different pieces, I guess, around Giannis, where you can turn, you know, 3 first-round picks and 2 pick swaps. You know, one of those picks eventually turns into Steven Adams. And you still have, you know, you bring in Stan Van Gundy, a veteran coach. Eric Bledsoe is there. So we'll see how that Bledsoe-Lonzo Ball pairing goes. The Williamson-Adams pairing will be intriguing. And then Brandon Ingram kind of, it comes back on a max contract. So that's another team that, you know, when we're talking about potentially being in that top 8, or I guess that top 10 now with the play-in, that's the you can certainly pencil the Pelicans in there. But what you're seeing, and we're talking about the West right now, is that, like, this is a deep conference. I mean, this is a really deep conference. And Dallas, New Orleans, Golden State, who knows what happens with that roster? Who knows what happens in Houston with James Harden? How does John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins come back from a health standpoint? And then those top 4, top 5 teams that we talked about at the top of the show.
Yeah, and Houston also added Christian Wood this offseason, a guy who had a breakout year last year. It's definitely intriguing for sure. The Memphis Grizzlies, another year of John Morant, who's only going to get better on paper. As the floor general for that team as well. They were in the thick of it at the end of the year. Somehow, some way, the San Antonio Spurs always find a way to be competitive. Yeah, the West is deep, and you know, the sky is blue. it's an incredible conference for sure in the NBA, top to bottom. And you know, switching over to the East, I touched on it a little bit as we began the topic, but I felt that the Atlanta Hawks this year, on paper, Travis Schlenk put them in a position to be a playoff team with the free agent additions that he had, and Danilo Gallinari, Bogdan Bogdanovic, not to be confused with Bojan, Chris Dunn, and Rajon Rondo. To me, that was a team that was a clear winner. Yes, you know, you touched on the Bucks getting Jrue Holiday. I think getting Bogdan Bogdanovic would have certainly helped them further, but they were able to disperse his money elsewhere and add a couple of players as well. Toronto losing Ibaka and Gasol, I do think, is going to hurt. I know they got Baines and you know, they re-signed Chris Boucher, but it's going to be interesting to see how they fare this year. They may take a step back from that second seed as they were last year. But yeah, for me, you know what, and I don't think in a traditional sense that people would say the Brooklyn Nets won the offseason, but anytime you get a healthy Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving back into the fold, that's a win in a sense. I'm curious how Steve Nash is going to stir that pot with all those ingredients that he has to work with. But yeah, for me in the East, the clear winner was the Atlanta Hawks, and obviously Washington
getting Russell Westbrook after not having John Wall should upgrade them on paper. But Atlanta really stuck out to me. When you look at the landscape of the East, who were your winners?
Yeah, I mean, I think we start with Atlanta. You know, they basically the last few years have rented out cap space to take back, you know, some undesirable contracts, and then they've gotten draft picks to come with it. You know, the Allen Crabbe contract a year ago, Jeremy Lin before that, Jamal Crawford, I believe in either 2017-18. This year, they basically said, hey, we've got, you know, $44, $45 million in cap space. Trae Young's entering year three of his rookie contract. We need to, you know, put players around him or put pieces around him. And when you look at, you know, with Danilo Gallinari and Bogdanovic, I really like the Chris Dunn signing for, you know, 2 years, basically $10 million at a really good value there. Rondo for 2 for $15. And then you've got Clint Capella coming back, who they acquired in the at the trade deadline, and he hadn't played at all. So you basically have another player that that you can kind of lump in there. They're going to be interesting because you kind of, as I say, accelerate the rebuild around, you know, Trae Young and DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish. Big thing is going to be what happens with John Collins. He's extension eligible up until December 21st, rookie extension eligible. If there's no deal, how does the Hawks handle it? How does Collins handle it? You've got Gallinari likely coming off the bench here. But it's all good problems for Lloyd Pierce, their head coach.
No, absolutely. I think this is certainly the best team Lloyd's had on paper for them to compete. And coming off a season in which they finished second worst in the East, I think they're a playoff team on paper at this point, or at the worst in the play-in games. Do you see it that way as well?
I do. I think they're probably right at 8 right now. And it's, you know, we talk about the West is deep. The East is interesting. You know, when you kind of just go through it and who are those 9, you know, who's that, I guess that 8, 9, and 10 grouping, is it, you know, Atlanta, Washington, we talk about Charlotte, maybe Chicago takes a step in there, Orlando, you know, playoff team the last couple of years. But I do think they're in that. I'd be stunned at the worst if they're not playing in that playing game next, you know, in May.
Yeah. And, you know, Washington, I think, certainly gave themselves a great chance to be a playoff team again. From what I've heard, within their organization, they think they can be a playoff team, certainly with the Westbrook trade, and maybe even go higher than that, somewhere around the 6 range in the East, depending on how all that shakes out. And Charlotte getting Gordon Hayward and LaMelo Ball to pair with the backcourt that they already had in Terry Rozier and Devontae Graham is going to be interesting. You know, eventually they're going to have to upgrade that front court a little bit more with, you know, to pair with guys like PJ Washington and Miles Bridges if they really want to take a step, but they should be improved as well. So the East is going to be interesting. And, you know, Philadelphia moving Al Horford, a lot of people thought that would be a tough task, but he didn't fit with that team. I think now it's going to be interesting to see how they fare with, really, Tobias playing more of the four, and if they can get Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid to help them take the next step and advance further in the playoffs. Now, with that in mind, we talked about the winners of the offseason. We got to talk about the losers. Every offseason we have it. There's some teams that make some moves that we don't necessarily get, or maybe we see it differently than they do. You know, let's start with the West. For me, Sacramento letting Bogdan Bogdanovic walk for nothing surprised me, because I felt, and this is a philosophical thing, and we saw this even with Portland when they kept Allen Crabbe years ago when the Nets made the offer sheet. Generally, you see teams match those type of offers, and try to flip a guy later on because it's an asset. We did not see that with Sacramento at this point. They obviously have to monitor the Buddy Hield situation as well. Another guy who's come up in trade rumors. But for me, really, when I look at the West, that was, it's one move, but it was a move that I didn't necessarily understand. What were your thoughts on what Sacramento did with that situation and any other teams that you felt didn't have as good of an offseason as they could have in the West?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Sacramento, and I agree with you there, you can argument it from both sides. You know, they've got a brand new front office with Monty McNair, who is in Houston, and has basically said, I'm going to shape this roster how I see it. And you saw with with not matching the $72 million offer sheet on Bogdanovic, I would probably have done it. It was a 4-year, $72 million deal. I know there was a trade bonus in there, but $18 million for a player in a prime coming off a good year. I think there's still value to flip either at the trade deadline or in the offseason. So you let him go. So I see it from Monty's perspective. I totally understand. But on the other end, you know, if you knew that was coming in, maybe you have to have a little bit of some hindsight, and could you maybe worked out a sign and trade with the Hawks where you could at least have gotten something value back. The De'Aaron Fox rookie extension, it's similar to what Denver did with Jamal Murray. Where Mitchell and Tatum and Bam have, basically been on center stage and have been in, big games, certainly playoff games. Fox is a good player. Is he a max player? We're going to see. We're going to see if he's a $163 million player. So, but it's hard for me to put a loser a tag on that when it is a new front office that is coming in and is looking to basically reshape it, as I said, their own vision. I think we could certainly put a questionable tag, and we'll revisit it a year from now or 2 years from now.
How about in the East, when you look at some teams that, instead of, if you don't want to say the loser tag, usually
questionable. Yeah.
Is there any teams in the,
how's that sound?
That works for me. When you look at the
confusing tag.
When you look at the East.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Oh no, go ahead. Were you going to say any other teams in the West?
I think the West, it kind of speaks for itself, but I think in the East, Mike, it's like, I feel like Detroit kind of took what they did in the condensed offseason and turned it into a science experiment. Right? Like, we don't know what is going to happen with this roster this year or going forward. I mean, 3 years, $60 million for Jeremy Grant, who's a power forward. He's not a small forward, where you have $76 million on a hook to Blake Griffin here. I thought 3 years, $25 million for Mason Plumlee was a huge reach, especially considering where centers were on the market. I mean, you've got Hassan Whiteside basically going for the minimum. Aaron Baines went for 2 years with a non-guaranteed in year two. So I think, Josh Jackson for 2 years, $10 million. Jahlil Okafor for the minimum. What you did at the draft, I thought Isaiah Stewart in the teens was a reach. I like Sadiq Bey picking at 19, moving off Luke Kennard, who was, a lottery pick, but it's another team where it's a new front office with Troy Weaver. You want to give him the betterment of the judgment here that he is going to reshape the roster where how he sees it. We'll see what happens with Derrick Rose, who's on an expiring contract. But yeah, probably the most, I guess, questionable / confusing is kind of how this Pistons team reshaped their roster.
As far as Detroit goes, my thing with Troy Weaver is he's shown, at least as part of the Oklahoma City Thunder regime, that he does have an eye for talent in the draft. So I'm curious to see how those picks shake out, but I'll give him the benefit of the doubt there. As far as the signings you mentioned, they certainly took the phrase go big or go home to a whole new level. this offseason. He kind of replaced Vlade Divac as the guy who loves centers for whatever reason, in a league where we're trending more towards small ball. But you mentioned Derrick Rose too. I do think they're going to eventually look to flip Derrick Rose at the trade deadline and get an asset back for him. It's been already determined that Killian Hayes, their rookie draft pick, is going to be the point guard of the present and the future. But that doesn't mean that a guy like Derrick Rose doesn't have value to a team that's contending. I do look for him to be their most sought after asset as we get into the season and looking at a possible trade candidate looking into the season. Other than that, I touched on it earlier. It would have been nice if Milwaukee could have ultimately landed Bogdan Bogdanovic, but it didn't happen. So we'll see now how those other guys that they added fill that void, in a sense, when they thought that they were going to get him. When you look at the other teams in the East, I know people will say Gordon Hayward was probably overpaid, and they had a wave and stretch Nicholas Batum. So you're talking about a guy who essentially cost them $39 million. But Gordon Hayward, first of all, in a situation like that, if you're Charlotte, you have to overpay to get that guy, because he's not going to go to that situation and be a lead dog there if he's not getting more compensated than if he was going to, whether it was re-signing with the Celtics or going to Indiana or other teams that had interest. So for Charlotte, yeah, they had to overpay to get him. But on the other hand, they're also trying to make moves to get better. I think the interesting thing was they paid him ultimately instead of Kemba Walker. Kemba was asked about that at media day, or media week it is now, and he didn't
and
have
that's
any.
Looking better, and that's actually looking better for him right now based on Kemba's knees, right? I mean, as much as Hayward, has been somewhat injury prone, with the two out of the 3 years, I mean, it's like, who would you rather have right now? Would you rather have $100 million plus left on Kemba Walker and a guy who's on the shelf, or Gordon Hayward?
Yeah, and I mean, that's one you can throw up for debate for sure. And I think it's just going to be interesting to see how Hayward and LaMelo Ball clicked with some of those guys they have in the backcourt. They already made a big commitment previously to Terry Rozier in the backcourt. And Devontae Graham is a guy that's extension eligible. We'll see how that shakes out now for Charlotte. But, we also touched on, I mentioned about Derrick Rose being a guy that I could see as a trade candidate going into the year. Certainly, there's a big fish out there, the big kahuna, James Harden, that everybody is talking about right now as a guy that could be a trade candidate. When I look at the Houston Rockets right now and Harden not being in camp yet, it kind of reminds me of the "This is fine" meme with the fire going around. It's obviously a bit of a hectic situation right now there. For you, when you look at some guys that could be trade candidates going into the year, who sticks out to you, and what do you make of the James Harden situation currently right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Harden, and we'll wait and see what he has to say, but from the outside looking in, it is probably the worst case of player empowerment that I've ever seen in my 20 years in the Nets and 5 years in the media here, where you have a player that's got 3 years left on his contract, has basically had an opinion on how that roster was put together. When you look at Dwight Howard, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, John Wall, basically how they've built that roster. And it's different than what Anthony Davis went through in New Orleans, where AD was there for 7 or 8 years, had gotten to a conference semifinal one time in his career, and basically said, like, I want out. I want to go somewhere where I can win. Front office hasn't done a good enough job, but you can get something for me and value here. And he was on an expiring contract here. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, the Harden situation, he's got 3 years left on his contract, right? I mean, everyone says it's two, but I still say it's three because it's $47 million in year three, and who knows where we're going to be in 3 years from now here. So it's a tough situation for a rookie head coach in Steven Silas, a rookie GM in Raphael Stone, as far as what direction they go with. I'm interested to see if when he shows up, is there going to be any discipline or any fine or suspension in here? I think even if you suspended him, he still has trade value based on what he can do on the court and what's left on that that contract here. And you know, the Jrue Holiday trade to Milwaukee, I think at least set the bar from a draft standpoint when you're getting 3 ones and 2 pick swaps. And you're getting Eric Bledsoe and George Hill. So if you're Houston, you're saying, well, wait a minute, I've got Harden under contract for 3 years. Holiday could be a free agent next offseason. I'm getting double of that, you know, and does Brooklyn have double of that to offer? I don't think they do. Is it Philadelphia? You know, does Ben Simmons become made available here? And does that appeal to the Rockets here? So, yeah, I mean, I think the Harden situation is fascinating. I've always said, Mike, that players, you can get more value out of a player from a trade standpoint when the season gets going, because let's face it, teams are not in that honeymoon off-season period anymore. Wins and losses mean things. Losing streaks happen. What happens if Brooklyn gets off to a slow start here? Are they maybe forced to do something that they wouldn't have done 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, and if you're Brooklyn, you know, do you add Kyrie Irving into that trade, a guy that wanted to come to the Nets organization, grew up a fan of the team? How does that look from an off the court perspective? You know, in previous years, the Nets hadn't been a major free agent destination for all-star caliber players. You know, you guys had obviously acquired Garnett, Pierce, and those guys through trades. So it's interesting to see how that would shake out. You touched on Philadelphia. I think Ben Simmons would be possibly the best player they can get right now on the market if they were going to do a trade. We know Daryl Morey has an affinity and a love for James Harden like probably no other. And it would be an interesting pairing with Joel Embiid for sure. Other than that, you know, we touched on Harden. I mentioned Derrick Rose. You look at San Antonio, you look at LaMarcus Aldridge, DeMar DeRozan as some guys that I could see being on the trade block, because to me, San Antonio is on the cusp of a rebuild with their young team out in the West. What do you make of those two guys?
Yeah, I mean, you could probably put Rudy Gay in there too. I mean, three really big, large expiring contracts. You know, DeMar had kind of a taste of what the Spurs are probably heading toward in the bubble when they really made, you know, LaMarcus didn't play because he was injured, and they really made a concerted effort to play, you know, with Deontay Murray and Derek White, Kelvin Johnson, Lonnie Walker, Jakob Poeltl, you know, some of those players here. How much of a buy-in is Aldridge going to have going forward? So I think those three players are interesting just because that's the team probably on the outside looking in, probably even the outside looking in of the top 10 when it comes to, you know, in the Western Conference. I think an interesting name, Mike, is PJ Tucker in Houston. I think that's going to be fascinating because Tucker is on an expiring contract. He wants an extension. I mean, this guy is an Iron Man. He doesn't miss games. He plays multiple positions. He is a team first player. You know, he's on a really good number at, you know, right close to $8 million. So I think he's a name to keep an eye on. I think Spencer Dinwiddie in Brooklyn is certainly going to, you know, keep an eye on him just because he is on an expiring contract, although he has a player option for $12 million next year. But can this Brooklyn team afford, you know, keeping Dinwiddie on a high number when you've already got Kyrie making, you know, $33-34 million. You know, they had brought back Joe Harris. Your luxury tax bill for 2021-22 would go through the roof like it is right now. So I think he's an interesting name. I said Tucker's an interesting name. I'm not going to throw Bradley Beal in that mix. I think that's kind of the easy, I think that's the easy way out. I think the Westbrook trade bought them some time there. I think we'll probably revisit the Beal discussion next offseason based on where that roster is. Certainly what happens in Indiana is with Victor Oladipo, if that team gets off to a slow start, with Oladipo, on an expiring contract.
And Miles Turner as well is another guy with Indiana that his name had been floated out there a little bit. They've got a ton of big men in Domantas Sabonis and Goga Batadze. So another guy I would keep an eye out in the East for sure. You touched on Spencer Dinwiddie, a guy that absolutely is going to opt out of his player option, barring a catastrophic injury, which we hope does not happen for him. But he has a chance to make a ton more money this summer. Had a great year last year. For the Nets, it's interesting with Spencer because he's the best insurance policy you can have for a guy like Kyrie Irving, who has shown in his career, I think, I forget exactly what the number is, but I want to say he's played more than 65 games three times in his career. I'd have to double check that, but something along those lines. And that's in a full 82-game season. Steve Nash has already said he does not expect Kyrie or KD to play the full 72-game season. They're going to have periodic rest days at times, so that's something to keep an eye on. I don't know if you saw this as well, but Dinwiddie was asked the other day during a media session if he had requested a trade, and he responded to the reporters.
I did see that.
he responded to the reporters' question. I'm a little caught off guard. A guy that takes less than market value to sign an extension with a team making a trade request. I don't know about that one, he said. But that one I thought was interesting. And I think pretty much you touched on a lot of the guys that certainly I could see as trade candidates, just because as you touched on, as you get into the season, losing streaks happen, expectations are not met by certain teams. I agree with you, especially on Brad Beal. I think Brad Beal, the trade talk there, it's like everybody's trying to speak it into existence. They're kind of pulling a LeVar Ball there. They just want to speak it into existence. And hey, for LeVar, it worked. Currently, he's got all three of his sons in the league, with LiAngelo getting a deal with Detroit to compete for a spot. And obviously, we know LaMelo on Charlotte and Lonzo in New Orleans. Other than that, I would say in Orlando, I think Aaron Gordon's a guy to certainly keep an eye on. A lot of teams have checked in on him. He's shown to be a versatile forward that in today's NBA, as a four-man, could be an intriguing option. It's just interesting to see what happens with them, because Jonathan Isaac is going to be out for this year. So maybe that makes them hold on to him because they don't have other front court options there at the four. But obviously John Hammond and Jeff Weltman love Jonathan Isaac. It'll be interesting to see how things shape up there. Touched on Miles Turner. I think we pretty much hit on all the guys other than that as I'm looking through the East.
I think Andre Drummond maybe, Mike, in Cleveland.
Last year of his deal,
He's on it. Yeah, he's on an expiring. How does he fit in with that roster? They had really had an 11 game sample before, the season was postponed in mid March. I think it's interesting what happens in Denver, right? Like guys like Gary Harris, Will Barton, if the Nuggets are on that cusp, or if that team is struggling, turn those two players into something there.
Yeah, they've been dangled at the trade deadline before. And other than that, one other guy I would say in the East to keep an eye on, Julius Randle with the Knicks. They just got Obi Toppin. They've got to clear some playing time for him. And other than that, you touched on in the West, Will Barton and Gary Harris. I completely agree with you there. Houston, depending on what happens with Eric Gordon, you could see a fire sale. If
with James Harden. If he gets moved, you could see Eric Gordon getting moved as well, in my opinion. And then they would tear it down. It would be a totally different rebuild phase. At that point, we touched on guys that we think could be moved. Now we want to get your predictions. Now, I'm not going to set these in stone and tablet, but it's always
well, you know how people like those, right? Like, when we do, you know, it's funny, Mike. When we do, and now I don't even think I'm going to do it next year. Is when we have to predict during the playoffs, right, for playoff series, and you pick, you know, like I tell you what, people take that personal. You know, if you say, hey, the Lakers are going to lose in six to the Nuggets, man, or the Celtics are going to lose in five to the Heat, those Celtics fans, they don't forget. They take it personal. I feel like saying, man, it's just something they asked me to do. I sit at my computer. I don't spend 4 hours analyzing the different series and stuff like that. But, yeah, people have people got good memories as far as when you do predictions.
And they always will screenshot them too. So, but at least in this case, we're on the pod, it's audio, a little different. Let's start with MVP, most valuable player in the league. For me, Anthony Davis is a guy that certainly sticks out. I know, Jared Dudley has, been kind of pushing that train a little bit, his Lakers teammate. If he stays healthy, sure, I could see it. You know, LeBron's going to need a little bit of time to, get his legs under him after just playing a long playoff run and winning that championship. Who do you see as your MVP for this season?
Are you looking at my notes here down in Florida, Mike? Do you have a camera in my office that you can see that I have AD next to the MVP there? And I say AD just because I want to go LeBron, but I'm concerned as far as where his minutes are going to be, and from a management standpoint, I guess you could put AD in that category too. But I think he is going to have a monster year. I mean, he might get the Giannis double double, where MVP defensive player of the year here. And so yeah, that's who I have down as my MVP. I think the interesting thing, Mike, with Giannis is, what happens if this guy has a monster year, right? Like, better than what we saw the last 2 years. Will the voters have, like, that MVP fatigue, right? Like, are we going to just, like, be like, you know what? I can't do it again. I can't vote for him 3 years in a row here, even though if he maybe is warranted that, to be in that discussion here. So I think Giannis is going to be interesting. I think what happens in Golden State, we'll see hopefully we get to see a healthy Steph Curry. Will be interesting. Joel Embiid in Philly playing for Doc Rivers, Jokic in Denver, Luka in Dallas. When does Porzingis come back? Can he kind of put that team on his shoulders like he did during last year in a good portion of those playoffs there? But for me right now, I've got AD as far as my MVP.
You know, it's interesting. Out of all those guys you touched on, Luka Doncic is the guy that could probably be the closest to averaging a triple-double. So you definitely have a great case for him. I just don't know if that Dallas Mavericks team is going to be high enough in the West, given Porzingis' injury. But hey, to your point, if he can carry them and make them a top-four team in the West, and Porzingis is out for a prolonged period of time, that could weigh with the voters. Giannis, you know what? You touched on it. If that guy puts up even better numbers than he has, that's just remarkable. Then that would be a great debate to have for sure. Embiid, you touched on. Can he stay healthy? The guy's got the talent to do it, certainly. And I think all those guys certainly make sense. Obviously, you'd be remiss if you didn't mention a guy like Kawhi or Harden, but it'll be interesting to see. But other than that, yeah, if he stays healthy, I it just feels like AD's entering the real prime of his career. And I think Luka has, obviously, knock on wood, a long career ahead of him, where he's going to be competing for that award. I get your thought process on Giannis. So seems like we're in agreement with that on AD for now. You touched on AD as a possible defensive player of the year. You know, the first guy I think of when I think of this award –
obviously he's up there. I could see Rudy Gobert having a defensive player of the year season for Utah. Just you know, coming off the year that he had last year, I think he's motivated along with Donovan Mitchell to take this team as far as they can. So he's a guy I don't even want to say to keep an eye on, because we know that the type of impact he brings, but I think he's going to be a prime contender with AD for the award. What say you, my friend?
Yeah, I mean, I had AD down for defensive player of the year. I think Kawhi is going to be fascinating just because of we've kind of, I don't want to say written Kawhi off, but it, you know, certainly how they lost last year left a lot of people kind of, is this Clipper team this, could they be this good? And there's certainly question marks there. You know, how many games does he play is another guy to watch. Gobert in Utah is interesting, you know, because he has earned player of the year before. He's been all defense. He's another guy on an expiring contract who we'll see over the next couple of weeks if there's an extension that that could be worked out. How does Draymond? We forget about Draymond Green in Golden State now. You know, if Draymond can come back healthy, I think he probably has certainly a little bit of an edge coming into this year, because everybody has written this Golden State team off with the Clay injury. But yeah, those are probably some names to keep your eye on.
Absolutely. As we go through the other awards, we go from MVP and defensive player to, let's go with rookie of the year. For me, I think I'll give you, I guess to me, I'll call him a sleeper pick. I think Killian Hayes is a sleeper pick because it seems like he's going to have an ample opportunity to play, get minutes, and put up stats with Detroit. You know, I touched on it earlier about Derrick Rose kind of being there to mentor him now. Obviously, James Wiseman steps into a great situation. You know, LaMelo Ball being the pick he was for Charlotte, he's going to get a chance, and Anthony Edwards. But Killian Hayes to me is a sleeper pick, I think, for rookie of the year. Which NBA freshman do you see coming away with the hardware this year?
Well, I think the guys up top, there's certainly going to be a learning curve when you're looking at Anthony Edwards, James Wiseman, LaMelo Ball, just getting from a game standpoint, coming off last year, you know, two out of three of those players, you know, didn't even play a full year as far as with the eligibility issue with Wiseman, and then LaMelo was hurt. I like Obi in New York. I think he can come in right now and play 25, 30 minutes and put up, you know, 15, 16 points, and I think that would be good enough for rookie of the year. One of those rare older players that was drafted in the top 10. We always talk about 18, 19 year olds. Tyrese Halliburton in Sacramento is going to be a name to keep an eye out. We talked about matching the offer sheet on Bogdanovic. Halliburton is going to have a lot of time. You know, he'll get some extended minutes here. Him, Buddy Hield, De'Aaron Fox, you know, we go with a three-court backcourt of guards here. So those would be my two guys as far as if I'm going to put 1-2 for rookie of the year.
I don't know if there's a person in the league that has a greater love for Tyrese Halliburton than you, my man. I had to
mention it. When we started with the show, and I talked about my love for Portland as far as what they did in the offseason, that people would be thinking I was contradicting myself if I didn't talk about the Trailblazers or Tyrese Halliburton. You know, I mean, as far as what I think he can do. Hey, I talked about as far as what I thought about him off the court, but this is a basketball discussion about on the court right now.
No, absolutely. I just got a kick, you know, when you were talking about him, and he was one of the better interviews that you had in all your years doing the pre-draft interviews. So I was just teasing you on that one, but obviously you're a fan of him on and off the court. Other than that, you look at guys, let's look at some six men of the year candidates. With Danilo Gallinari coming off the bench in Atlanta, I think he's still going to have a chance to play big minutes and be a contributor on a team that should be the playoffs. So I don't know if people are looking at him as a guy that could compete for the award, but
you know, I'll be honest with you. I'm not here to say, oh, Lou Williams every year or, the same guys. I always try to bring somebody different to the fold that maybe people aren't looking at. So he's a guy I would keep an eye on out in the East. When you look at guys that are going to be studs off the bench, who sticks out to you?
I got two names for you. Tyler Hero, and I say Tyler because I think he'll come off the bench, and Miami goes Dragic, Jimmy Butler, Duncan Robinson, a combination of Harkless, Olynyk at the four, and then Bam. So I think Tyler will probably – he'll probably come off the bench but finish probably all these games here. And then Steph Curry in Philadelphia. I think how the Sixers play and how they went about improving their shooting, I think Steph is going to have a huge opportunity – to get 14 to 16 points a night down in Philadelphia. So I'm picking two shooters Hero and Curry.
Well, in a league where shooters shoot and it's a bit of a small ball era, I can certainly see those picks. Most improved. I touched on it earlier at the very start when we talked about, you talked about Paul Millsap coming back. To me, Michael Porter Jr., after what we saw in the playoffs, if this guy can stay healthy, to me, is absolutely going to be the league's most improved player. This kid has star potential written all over him in terms of his skill set. If this kid can just stay healthy, I think it's his award to lose. What do you think?
Well, we can't lie. We can't vote for like a player that was selected in the top two or three. Right, like we can't vote for Luka again or Brandon Ingram again, like, you know, and that's one of the big things, Mike, that kind of is my pet peeve as far as, you know, and I think those two players are heck of a players and had good years last year, but how do we vote for Brandon Ingram for most improved? I mean, the guy was a top three pick.
Yeah,
same with Luka. I think that disqualifies those guys right off the bat. I mean, shame on the team if these guys are most improved in year three or four, but I am going to actually agree with you on Michael Porter Jr. as most improved. And I think the stage is there for him to get this award. Did not play his rookie year. We saw last year really scratching the surface and then come into the playoffs and had some high moments, certainly a work in progress. And it's a matter of just kind of getting his feet wet here. But, Mike Malone has been pretty up front as far as saying, hey, I know who my starting point guard is with Jamal Murray. I know who my starting big is with Nikola Jokic. Everything else is up for grabs here. Between Gary Harris and Will Barton and with Porter and Paul Millsap here, that the starting job is there for Porter to take. And if he doesn't take it, you're going to see his minutes at a really good clip this year.
I agree. I'm glad we see eye to eye on that. And the last award that we have to predict, Coach of the Year. Now, for me, I always look at this. For me, I look at it a couple of ways. You could have the best team and the best record, but I also look for guys that can make a big turnaround with their teams. I'm curious to see what Stan Van Gundy does with the Pelicans. Being where they finished more towards the bottom of the West, I think they can, if they can become a playoff team in the West, I think you'd have to look at him as a guy that could be a candidate. Again, these are all hypotheticals. Same thing with a guy like Lloyd Pierce in the East. Given where Atlanta finished the second worst team in the East last year, if they can become a playoff team, I think that's a guy that's going to deserve some consideration. And also sticking in the East, Steve Nash, here's my thing with that. Maybe you look at that and say, well, how much of that is X's and O's? But as we've seen with a guy like Steve Kerr in Golden State, when you do have stars, it's about managing those collective personalities. And when you're managing guys like Durant and Kyrie and getting that all to mesh with the players that they have, with the trade rumors that are swirling around James Harden, I think he's a name to watch as well. Coach of the Year, I think, is the hardest award to pick, by the way, because it's all based on team success and you don't know injuries and things like that. But with that said, Who do you look at as a potential coach of the year candidate or candidates?
All right, I've got three down here. And the first one is I'm going to throw you a curveball. A Dwight Gooden 1984 New York Mets curveball right now. And I'm going to say Nate Bjorkman in Indiana.
Okay.
I think the stage is set for Nate. And we don't, I mean, the Indiana team, we never, like, we just poo-poo. And we'll see you at the sixth seed, right? Every year, right? Sixth seed. I think if the wheels don't fall off and the Oladipo situation doesn't go haywire here, and there's a lot of ifs there, and Malcolm Brogdon can stay healthy, and Tony and TJ Warren can play like TJ Warren in Orlando, I think this Indiana team can jump into the top four, top five in the Eastern Conference. I really do. And I think if Sabonis and Turner, we'll see what happens there. And I think we're going to be hearing about, you know, rookie coach Nate Bjorkman as far as his name being mentioned for coach of the year as far as what he can do there. My second on the list is James Borrego in Charlotte. We talked about the Hayward signing, LaMelo Ball. You've got Devontae Graham, Terry Rozier. You have PJ Washington, Miles Bridges. I think, and we could talk about the Hayward contract forever, years three and four, but Hayward's going to make this team a lot better. And I think if they can get into that eight range, nine range, I think Borrego is going to get some votes for coach of the year. And then my third one is, you know, maybe a little more obvious is probably Monty Williams in Phoenix, especially for a team that's been so dormant from making the playoffs here that if they can get, and I'm not saying that if Monty gets into eight, he should be coach of the year, but I think if they can make a big jump and maybe sneak into that six range, maybe five, six range, then he should be up there as one of these guys being talked about coach of the year.
I certainly I agree with them. I agree with your picks on that. It's going to be an interesting season to see which teams meet expectations, which teams rise above, and which teams falter. Bobby, we've pretty much previewed the league from top to bottom, as always. Love talking with you. I appreciate your insight. Was a pleasure, my man.
Thanks, Mike. This was fun.
For those tuning in, if you want to follow Bobby on Twitter, keep up with his instant salary cap updates and front office moves around the league, you can follow him on Twitter at BobbyMarks42, and make sure you check out his work on ESPN.com. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. As always, if you want to hear more episodes of the Hoopside Podcast with players, coaches, media personalities, and people like Bobby Marks, make sure you like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. You can also keep up with my tweets on Twitter at Mike A. Scotto. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.